There are shows with psychics.
And there are shows with doctors.
But there's no show like The Psychic and the Doc.
Your practical paranormal power unleashed.
This show synthesizes the talents of world-class medium Mark Anthony, the psychic lawyer, psychic explorer,
and street-smart spiritualist, behavioral psychologist, Dr. Pat Basile. All subjects are on the table, and no topic is taboo. Inspiration, insight,
action, and fun as Mark Anthony connects callers with loved ones in spirit.
In tandem with Dr. Pat's fresh, no-nonsense, street-smart, intuitive insights. And she is hilarious.
Extraordinary problems
require extraordinary solutions, which may come from this side
or the other side. This is The Psychic
and the Doc. And it starts now. All right, Dr. Pat, great to have you back.
It's great to be back. I'm almost back, but I'm a little bit nasal, but that's okay. It doesn't matter.
Hey.
I'll just blow my nose in the middle of the show. How's that sound?
Well, you know, we have a really special show. Yeah. Tomorrow is Friday the 13th. And, you know, we couldn't possibly have two better guests on tonight for our Friday the 13th spooktacular show. We've got Brandon Alves and Mustafa Gattalari, and they are paranormal investigators extraordinaire. Brandon utilizes a scientific approach to his paranormal investigations, and he founded the American Paranormal Research Association, the APRA, and this propelled him to become the paranormal technician of the Ghost Hunters team. Now, Mustafa is the paranormal historian, a man after my own heart. I love understanding the history and the mystery behind supernatural phenomenon. And he's a site analyst of A&E's Ghost Hunters in the upcoming docuseries, Haunted Discoveries, which he produces and co-hosts with Brandon Alves. Now, both of these men employ the scientific method in their analysis of supernatural and paranormal phenomena. And together they have co-authored a brand new book, which just came out in January, Elements of a Haunting. And the subtitle is Connecting History with Science to Uncover the Greatest Ghost Stories Ever Told. So welcome to The Psychic and the Doc, Brandon Alves and Mustafa Gattalari. Great to have you guys here.
Oh, thanks for having us on. This is awesome.
Yeah, how much fun are we ready to have?
Oh, so much. Always. Hey, Friday the 13th, you know, coming up. It's an exciting time for sure.
It totally is. Hey, thank you. Thank you guys for joining us here today. I want to just kick it off with almost a paradoxical comment and want you both to chime in on it. And what I mean by a paradoxical comment is this. You know, we're in this world, right? Just going to make the statement that there's this view that a large group of people are paranormal skeptics. Let's just say that. I'm just going to be ignorant for a minute. So there is this view, somebody said it, yet the industry, film industry, book industry, television series industry. So if that's really true, who the heck are these people that are watching all this, Brandon?
Exactly. No, you're right. Who is watching all of it? And the millions upon millions of people across the world is who's watching it. And I think more times than not, skeptics are tuning in more than some of the believers, I would think. Because, you know, they're straddling the fence in a way, you know? And there's always, you know, there's a lot of people out there that do call themselves skeptics that are, in all reality, non-believers. You know, a skeptic is someone that wants to find evidence that the phenomena or whatever it may be exists. And then there's people that say they're skeptics that are just plain out non-believers. Yeah. So there's a lot of people out there that I think are skeptical that do consume the content and believe more so than they put off, for sure.
You know, Dr. Pat brought up an interesting point that, you know, there's lots of people watching this. And, you know, when you turn on TV now, there's all these different shows about, you know, paranormal investigations. Do you think, and I want to put this question to Mustafa because he's the historian. Mustafa, do you think that this is a fad or do you think that this is a growing trend? In other words, is interest in the paranormal and supernatural investigation, is this going to become the norm, or do you think this is just sort of a, right now it's a fad?
No, definitely not a fad. We've been obsessed with the idea of a life after death since even before Abrahamic religions. There's been the idea of an afterlife in Sumerian Mesopotamia. Some of the earliest transcripts of human civilization all suggest that everybody wants to know what happens to us after we die. Now, I think there are definitely trends in like the television space in terms of like how investigations are represented. There's a lot of like demonology, and there's a lot of really dubious practices that are implemented on television and TV shows. I think those are fads. I think, you know, a lot of the idiocy that is pawned off as like, you know, legitimate investigation. And, you know, because a lot of times people are really afraid to kind of like do actual scientific research because they're going to be like, well, what if we don't find anything? So they intentionally use devices or they use methodologies that are designed to give false positives. It's kind of like being in a relationship where like you send like 15 texts to a person and then they go and they give you like one little response and you're like, oh man, that's my girlfriend, or oh, that's my boyfriend. And it's like, no, like they see you or call you every like 8 weeks to hang out with you when nobody else is around. They're not your girlfriend. They're not your boyfriend. Don't listen to what they're telling you. So I think it's like the same kind of goes with a lot of these shows is you'll see them do that. So there's fads in that. But our obsession with reflecting on death and then using that reflection to live bigger lives, because that's what I think the ultimate goal for me and Brandon is we basically focus on these really kind of macabre, as some people say, subject matters. It's really just to live bigger lives. So I think humanity understands that you reflect on death in order to live your life to the fullest. And from everything that we've documented in our most recent cases that we've done for an upcoming show, Haunted Discoveries, seems to suggest that the people who are persisting are those who did just that. So, yeah, definitely not a fad. We've been obsessed with it since day one. Since the second we had consciousness, we've been obsessed with it.
I love it. I love that you're both are creating the bridge between the metaphysics, the paranormal, and the science. And, you know, it's not the first time that we've had a conversation about that, but it's the first time that we have two people like you, you know, as Mark likes to say, you know, providing evidence. I'm a researcher myself, and I've never been able to present a hypothesis that somebody didn't want to see some statistics on, right? They don't call it anything. But what I want to ask you both is, and this is my own personal experience and people close to me, there have been times where things have happened in my life that have made me more open, more aware. A death of a loved one, something, an event. And I think, Brandon, I believe I have this right. I think you had a similar experience, you know, with the loss of someone. And yet, I can't find very many people, when you ask them a simple question, do you believe in ghosts? I can't find many that say, absolutely not, right? And even those that do, when you start to chat with them, but the question is, there are levels of belief. For you both, this is a personal journey, Brandon, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, my journey began, you know, in 1995 when I lost my oldest brother to cancer. He was only 24 years old, very young, left two daughters, a wife. And, you know, being 8 years old at that time and having to cope and grieve and learn about death at that young age, that started getting my mind going in a direction of, is there a consciousness after death? Do we survive death in some way? But it wasn't until 2004, at the age of 17, I lost another brother to suicide. And that really just kind of, you know, blew it all wide open for me. Really, you know, started my journey into the paranormal, and I started reading everything I could possibly get my hands on associated with ghosts and hauntings, everything from psychic phenomena to scientific investigation. It just made me a different person, and, you know, kind of started this lifelong journey that I'm on now. And again, it wasn't really a ghostly experience I had per se. It was about that loss. And I actually wrote an article for Llewellyn not too long ago that I kind of related to paranormal investigation and ghost hunting is almost a force, is almost a form of grief therapy for some people, you know, where you're looking for those answers. You're trying to find, you know, that next step, you know, that last great frontier, if you will. So yeah, I absolutely agree with that, that it's very personal for a lot of people. And I think that once you open your mind to those possibilities, it really creates that journey.
Yeah. Mustafa, was it the same for you?
Yeah. I think it was the same coin, just an opposite side. I grew up, my family and I, we grew up in a haunted house. We were all convinced there was a lot of like really strange phenomena that occurred there. And then my family is extremely superstitious, peasant Albanians, you know, any bad thing happened, we're cursed, and they kind of didn't want to take responsibility, you know, for their own, as I saw it, you know, I'm unduly harsh. Like Brandon knows, I'm a very happy go lucky guy, but I'm pretty brutal when it comes to judgments of myself and other people. So I kind of really judged my family. I was like, look at these lazy morons. Like they're just like kind of blaming all their issues on these, like on these jinns, like, you know, these supernatural entities. So I started looking into, jinns and studying jinn, but I saw that a lot of the phenomena that was occurring in our house didn't really kind of vibe with what jinns were about. Where I said, well, there was something weird going on in the house, so let me start researching. And it seemed like a lot of that stuff was paranormal. And there was a ghostly activity, ghostly phenomena. So then I started kind of looking into, you know, more into the history of the home and what had happened there. And it seemed like that there's a good case to be made in theory that the spirit, if you will, of a gentleman who lived there, who by all accounts had you know, taken his own life inside that home, was still there. And then that kind of left me with a lot of questions. And I was still kind of on the fence. And there's sometimes, and I think Brandon feels the same way, where we'll be in the room talking to nothing and no one for hours at a time without getting any results. And we're just like, what the hell is the paranormal? Like, what is this? Like, what are we doing? You start to like question your own life choices. But at the time I was kind of doing it to just really help a lot of members. That gave me a sense of a closure. So a lot of like my Albanian, some family who are having, you know, issues with a curse or people investing in a weird, yeah. Can you hear me?
You know, yeah. I'm sorry, you were breaking up a bit. Okay.
Yeah. If you can hear me now, yeah, I was using that as like a pageantry to kind of help them get through their grieving process.
Yeah, I have a question. I'm a paranormal investigator as well, and a fellow Llewellyn author. And, you know, in my most recent book, I introduced my concept of the electromagnetic soul, which I'm explaining spirits on the basis of electromagnetic energy. And for a lot of people, they don't necessarily understand the difference between a spirit and a ghost. They use the terms interchangeably. And when I was going to law school, I was in Macon, Georgia. And the first place I lived in, I only lived there for about a month, and here's why. I lived in this old building, and Macon's one of these antebellum southern towns, all these beautiful mansions. And I lived in this loft apartment, and every time I would come home, this intense depression would come over me. Now, I'm a medium, so I'm sensitive to this stuff. And I kept thinking about hanging myself. Now, this is not something that I ever think about. And I kept getting this tightness around my throat. And then every Friday morning at 6 a.m., the phone would ring and there'd be nobody on the phone. And it was getting more and more intense. And I kept feeling this darkness there. And I'll never forget, I went to the landlord and I said, you know, I don't know if I can handle living here. And she goes, you know, an apartment just became available in one of our properties across the street. You can move in right now. No questions asked. Because I remember when I knocked on the door, she looked at me. She goes, oh, you're the law student that lives in. And she gave that apartment. Okay. So I'm moving in this new apartment. Never thought about hanging myself again. It's like the sun came up in my soul. All right. As paranormal investigators, what's your take on that?
Yeah, you know, there's so many different types of spirits, ghosts, entities. There's so many different types of terminology you can use, right? Right. But I think you're right with your theory about, you know, electromagnetic energy and that retaining not only maybe some kind of consciousness, but also being able to affect us. I mean, we do know that, you know, electromagnetic radiation and frequencies do affect the human brain and temporal lobe activity and things of that nature. So very well, there could be a possibility that this consciousness that is somehow in manifesting itself in the form of electromagnetic radiation or frequencies can affect someone, especially someone like yourself who does have abilities that can heavily affect you. And people living their everyday lives, there's a lot of people that are in a building that say has bad wiring or high levels of EMF. They're next to a transformer pole or something, and they're having effects associated with that and don't know what it is.
I do think
you're definitely onto something there. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was very interesting. And I don't mean to go on, but it was my first book, Never Letting Go. So I moved to this new apartment and I noticed, like, just out of my peripheral vision, I kept seeing things. So I'm in this new apartment and stuff would fly off the table, matchbook, you know, a cup or something. And it was like, and I kept feeling another energy there. And I remember talking to one of my neighbors who was a law student. And I said, this is going to sound weird, but do you ever feel that this building, and before I could say anything, she goes, haunted? Oh my God, totally. But the thing that we agreed on was this energy seemed kind of jovial, whereas in the other place, it was real negative. Now, here's my question for you and Mustafa. I believe that there are spirits, okay, that will come and visit. I mean, that's what I do. I communicate with spirits, and that's why I'm on a lot of paranormal investigations. A lot of teams want me there because we see if what I get corroborates with the technical data from the devices that they're using. Do you believe that some hauntings may actually be residual energy echo, that it's not necessarily a conscious spirit, but rather the energetic vibration, matter retaining vibration of a traumatic event, such as a suicide or a child dying or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, through a lot of our cases, we've discovered that activity or anything that we've documented, they're very different. Sometimes it feels intelligent and you can engage with it. And that's always kind of like the dream. That's what everybody wants, to be able to like talk and interact. But then there have been cases where, you know, we actually encountered something where it almost felt like it was a cloud that we would follow around that was like do. And this is like something that we've discovered is very typical of like jails and hospitals, where there will be like this cloud of environmental change.
Yeah, it's like a dense negative energy is the way, you know, because what I like about the approach that you guys take, and then I know Dr. Pat's got a question.
Go in.
Is you? Yeah, go ahead. You're breaking up, Mustafa. We're losing you. So you know what's happening is, and I'm not joking about this.
I know what's happening.
It's spiritual entities. A lot of times, I was doing a reading yesterday, and it kept getting interrupted. And it was funny because what the spirit was telling me, because the woman said, does my son give me signs? And I go, well, he uses electric devices. She goes, yeah. She started going down the list of everything that cuts out. Okay. And that's how he lets her know, that he's around. Dr. Pat, you've had a lot of encounters, with these presents. Do you want to, talk about some of that?
Yeah, I think when you have early encounters at a very young age, you don't see them as encounters. And what do I mean by that? And this is something I'd like to hear from each of you about. You know, the movie, the breakthrough movie that I related to as a young person was, what was that, The Fifth Sense or something like that?
Sixth Sense, yeah.
Yeah. And I related to it because I got sent to psychotherapy for walking in my house one day in the Bronx, where my dad would lock the front doors and the back doors and lock you in. There was only one way in the house and you couldn't get out. That's what happens when you live like there, right? And I remember I got sick and I came home from school. And the bottom line with all of that was I walked in and I saw three people. And I could describe them to a T to you right now. Right now.
Wow.
They looked like they were in sepia form. The man had a really cool hat on, kind of suspenders, really, I don't know, what's the year, 40? I'm a kid, so I'm giving my knowledge as an adult to what I saw. But I saw them standing there. She stood right next to him, a nice little flowered shirt, like a dress. I could pinpoint the color of her shoes, really cool hat, holding on the hand of a young child. And the young child stood there, just kind of almost like mom, but not quite, but the same energy. And I got to tell you, I thought they were people. So what did I do? Ran out of the house, locked the door behind me, went to my neighbor. The neighbor called the police in the entire District 14 of the Bronx. The police cars just piled onto the house, right? Lining up police, the fire. And they couldn't get in the house because every door in the house was locked from the inside. So I had to let them in. I let them in. No windows broken. They wanted me to say that I made it up. And I'm a kid. I'm like eight. I didn't make it up. I described it in detail. You know, I saw them in that room. And that was, for me, the second encounter I had. But I refused to deny it. And so when you're an eight-year-old and you think you're seeing things, they send you to Dr. Jacoby. The good news is Dr. Jacoby couldn't help me. But how many other kids and people go through that, right? They never came back to the house. I didn't see them, but there were other things. I don't think the house was haunted, but at a very young age, I got to understand that Menahunes do exist.
Yes.
Right? Don't you encounter that where, you know, we're living in this world where there's anecdotal, there's science data. And, you know, we are now in a world of pop culture that would just absolutely not you can't turn it off now. And even though the pop culture is a little bit bizarre, making stuff up, they make stuff up. I mean, okay, right? I am the one that believed the Blair Witch Project was real. I mean, I'm not kidding. I was telling everybody about it. I was just all my friends. I'm like, no, that's real. That happened. But why would I believe that? Because I had that childhood experience. And then mm-hmm. I said, go to the website. Go look at what they got on the website, right? Look, there's all these interviews. I was shocked to find out it wasn't real. But how many people go through and have these experiences and don't have the benefit of you two to help us understand, explain, and bring the scientific impact into it, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, so many people have these experiences. I mean, like you said, they don't realize that what they're dealing with may be supernatural or paranormal, you know, that it's so clear and present and realistic that they think it's a person, like someone that broke into your home. So it happens so often. I remember a case that Mustafa and I worked in Connecticut a couple of years back with ghost hunters, where there was a child in the home that was terrified, like just completely scared, would not sleep in his own room, would not sleep in his own bed. And we went in and we actually conducted an experiment, Mustafa and I, where we set up data loggers on the staircase where they claim to not only see this man walking up and down, but they hear the footsteps almost on a daily basis. And we thought in our head, you know, just because they're hearing it and seeing it, does that mean that it's not taking place in some form or another at all times? So we set up these data loggers, and lo and behold, we were getting pressure changes perfectly in correlation with someone walking up and down the staircase. So just because in our reality that people are having this experience of seeing this person or hearing these footsteps doesn't mean that it's still not happening without our other senses. So it's really interesting to think that something like that can be happening at any given time, but just because we don't have, you know, the ability to see it or experience it doesn't mean that it's not taking place.
Well, exactly. What's the maxim in science is the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. And because you guys really like using technology and approach paranormal investigation from an analytical standpoint. What types of equipment do you use? And do you have a favorite or a favored type of device? Because here's what everything is scanning different forms of the different sections of the EM spectrum. I know that you do like infrared, and then there's radio waves, and then there's different light signatures. What is your favored or preferential equipment that you use?
There's so many different types of technology that we use on investigations. And, you know, one thing for our approach is that we try to use technology from other industries that we adapt into our work. We typically like to stay away from anything that's made for the paranormal, something that's a gadget that's made to detect a ghost, quote unquote. We've been very lucky to work with some very brilliant engineers, medical doctors, and scientists. One of our closest mentors and scientific consultants is a man named Dr. Harry Klor. And he's the first person in history to receive two PhDs simultaneously. Wow. And he received those in physics and chemistry. And he's someone that we work with closely that, not only advises us, but helps us realize that if we want to document the phenomena that people are experiencing, we have to step out of our comfort zone and utilize technology and expertise from various technical industries. So I'd have to say one of the devices that we've been using a lot lately is an EMCCD camera, and that's an electron multiplying camera. And this camera is typically used by the digital imaging scientific community to record single photon events. And photon events are light events that take place that are typically not seen by the human eye. It's used a lot in research with NASA, and they're always looking into different types of photons and how it affects, you know, space and how, you know, it goes into black holes. Like the last two things that, you know, exist in a black hole before, you know, becomes a black hole is pressure and photon events.
Exactly. Yeah. So I would love to go on an investigation with you guys, because my analysis of all the different forms of spirit contact, whether it's mediumship, NDE, shared death experiences, deathbed visions, direct visitations and contact, is all based on quantum physics. Because see, what people in our field understand is that there is a logical explanation for all of this. And I like, Brandon, when you came on initially, the first statement you said was about skeptics. You see, there's a difference between a skeptic and a cynic. A skeptic is open-minded, but wants the proof. A cynic is just mind is closed, doesn't want to hear anything, doesn't want to know anything. And it is through science that this, that what we do is verified to be true. And so, because I've seen that everything has a logical and a rational explanation. This isn't magic. This isn't woo-hoo. And we're not making this up. And that's what I love about the work that you guys do. Mustafa, I want you to talk a little bit about the jinn. You mentioned those earlier. And for the benefit of our listeners who don't or who are unfamiliar with the term the jinn, could you explain what that is?
Yeah. Can I just comment for a minute? I love the way you described your experience. I'm going to actually read it. In the beginning, I was always chicken shit. Absolutely. I am right there with you. I just needed to put that out there, because sometimes people look at us and they think, oh, he's always had it going on. He's always been in. But I was reading this and I'm like, yes, you could not get me to play hide and seek. I don't care where it was. So I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's, you know, and things, we'll get Mustafa, that's, you see, Dr. Pat is one of the most credible people you're ever going to meet, okay? She just doesn't believe anything. She wants an explanation for it. And when you can get someone who is a PhD saying, I had this experience, okay? And that's what we have to get through to. And so, and Dr. Pat referred to them as the Metahune, okay? I've been in England and I've encountered fairies. I was in Japan and I encountered the kami. And I'd like to know if what those are would be what Mustafa would describe as the jinn.
Yeah, because isn't it a love-hate relationship, Mustafa? I mean, I was like you. I was scared to death, but I had to watch every Nightmare on Elm Street. What the heck was going on? Go ahead, Mustafa. Give us some education.
Well, it's funny that you bring up Nightmare on Elm Street.
I know. Father, I read the book.
My father and older brother would torment me with that film. I couldn't even hear his voice. Like, I would cover my ears. And I actually ran out of a doctor's office when I was like 3 or 4 years old. It was on Halloween. I had to go get a checkup, and the doctor was wearing his sweater. And I ran out and into like the highway. And my mom had to go and stop the cars because I was so afraid of him. Okay. So, Jinn, just a brief explanation. So in the Islamic tradition, it's believed that there are two higher life forms that God, Allah, like we call them, same thing, created.
Right.
And that's man and jinn. And jinn exists in a separate dimension, even though that word's not used, but they exist in like another plane of existence. And it's believed that just like men and women, jinn have... there's good jinn, there's bad jinn, and you have jinn who will like come and like mess with human beings if they want. So a lot of times jinn are responsible for, you know, what people call possession. They can possess people, they can take people into the dimension, and they can also put curses on people. You know, they can give you illnesses and afflictions, and they can basically systematically ruin your life. They'll move things from like room to room, and some people believe that ghosts do that and stuff. But what we experienced was kind of like almost like it wasn't jinn, it was like poltergeist like activity. Like, it's not believed that jinn will open and close cabinets for no reason or anything like that. It's not believed that jinn, like you'll hear like just like footsteps, or you'll see things moving in front of you. It's mostly jinn have like a pointed purpose and kind of like ruining your life or anything like that, and like a bad jinn. So that's what my family believed. Like, one of my favorite stories about jinn from the old country is that they would like take the farmers' horses at night, and then like people would, their horses would come back in the morning, and the manes would be braided. And that's because the jinn used your horses for their wedding processions, because I guess jinn go find like a dining hall somewhere and get a nice deal for like $25 a plate or something, and they go and get people to come in and serve them chicken frances, and like, you know, they get a DJ or something.
It's funny when he said that, it reminded me when I was in the Amazon, and I was on an expedition in the Amazon, and we went up the Urubamba River, which is one of its tributaries. And we're in some very remote areas among the Aymara Indians. And the Amazon's really cool because they have the freshwater dolphin, and they're pink. You know, there's these pink dolphins, and they have this really long dorsal fin. It doesn't look like, you know, the type of dolphin you think of. The reason I'm bringing that up is, young women in the villages, and these villages, no electricity, no running water. Anytime a young woman got pregnant and who wasn't married, the belief is that the pink dolphin would transform into a handsome young man at night and take advantage of her. And the Aymara Indians in this area of the Urubamba treated the pink dolphins as spiritual entities, you know. And of course, you know, we're there as, you know, there was like a dozen crew and a dozen passengers on this research vessel that I was on. And so, you know, we're listening to all this, you know, we're trying to keep our American comments to ourselves, like, yeah. So when a girl gets knocked up, a dolphin did it, you know? But the thing is, and you know, my family's Italian, and Dr. Pat's family's Italian, and we have a superstition for all occasions. Okay. And when you're talking about in Albania, I'm laughing because that's just across the Adriatic, you know, from us. But I think that in less developed societies, traditionally, you would have to have an explanation for why bad things happen, and it's easy to blame it on a spirit. And that's why we've got to take it away from that into, why do these people come up with that? Well, maybe it is the, you know, my daughter got knocked up by a dolphin. But then again, people are, like Dr. Pat said, she's 8 years old and she's seeing people in spirit with accuracy and specificity. And so over the centuries, people have to come up with some type of explanation for this. And that, Mustafa, sounds like what where the jinn kind of came from, too. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think specifically in my family's instance, it's like we were way in over our head, got this house that we definitely couldn't afford. And my dad was like hustling to try to do it. So I think it was almost like a mass kind of, I always assumed it was like this mass psychosis where we were all just like, yeah, it's the jinn. That's why we can't like, that's why we can't be happy. Not because like we should have never moved into this freaking house to begin with. We couldn't afford it. You know, and then, you know, my dad's working all these odd jobs and, you know, to try to like, you know, pay for the mortgage. But the weird thing is we did experience stuff. Was it connected to the death of the individual who was there prior, who took his own life? I don't know. I think that's kind of something that maybe I kind of came up with in my own head to try to justify what went down, but there's no, or maybe it was just that collective kind of energy from all of us being so high strung, you know, and stressed out. Like you're a kid, you hear calls from bill collectors and stuff, and all of us, and you know, in the back of our heads, we knew that there was a possibility we wouldn't be able to live in the house. Like we knew that, but we never addressed it. So I think maybe that kind of fed into it. I don't know. Or maybe the fact that we kept feeding into this idea of like jinns. And Brandon and I have done a lot of work on thought form manifestation in our last few cases for haunted discoveries. And we've had some pretty incredible results with that. So documented too. So it's like, maybe that was an instance of that. I don't know. But do I think it was like a bunch of jinn sitting around a round table? We're like, how are we going to mess with the Gadolaris? Like, I don't know. I mean,
and they never seem to look like Barbara Eden, do they?
No.
Yeah, I love this. You know, I could listen to you guys all the time, but I want to remind people about the book and what you got upcoming, because I went through the book and I also saw that there was an audio version, but I'm excited to really talk with you guys. I want people to know, one, how did they find out more about you? How did they get plugged into what you're doing? Could you guys give us some information here?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I have a website, BrandonJElvis.com. You can go there. I mean, Mustafa and I are both on social media, pretty active. So we're always talking with people, and Elements of a Haunting is out there. You can get it through Llewellyn, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, yep. All that good stuff. And we do have a new series coming up here in fall that's going to be coming out called Haunted Discoveries that we're very excited about. And we get to some pretty cool theories and testing some really wild ideas with some really cool people. An aerospace engineer from the Department of Defense, Dr. Harry Clore. We bring in some people from outside the genre into our crazy little circle. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
I love it. I want to ask you guys a question because you do so much work. And, you know, people always ask me, oh, my God, 20 years you're doing this. You can't possibly be excited about anything new. That is so far from the truth. Just saying. But I got to ask you, I mean, here you are, a couple new adventures. I'd like to know from each of you, without you giving away like a spoiler alert, what was it you've now learned and gained, Mustafa, from the book, from this new venture and from what you're about to do? And then Brandon, you too. I mean, I can't imagine that you didn't have some holy what moments.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I learned, without giving too much away, and this applies to not even paranormal investigations, this applies to any type of work, is when you're working very, very, very hard to tackle a simple thesis, right? Or like a simple thing that's like, okay, how are we going to prove beyond, you know, to us, to ourselves, that this is haunted or not, or there is something going on here that is beyond the realm of human understanding, and really hold ourselves to a super high standard. So that can be the same if you're a musician and you want to like go and make a song that is you're going to actually be proud of, or we're going to make a series that, because Brandon and I have very similar ideologies and work ethics of like, how can this be up to our standard? What do we want to say? And that goes through production, that goes through, like, you know, kind of heading the ship of a crew. And that goes through, this is what the investigation is, and this is what we need to hit. We put so much work into pre-production, and our theories is that how we want to see them live out is there was a certain level of nervousness of an idea of like, this shit might not work. And right. We got to make sure, and we were overcompensating so much that what we ended up getting in return were results that we could not have banked upon at all. I mean, we had cast crew members who were staying after filming was done. You know, they weren't getting paid or anything for an extra 2.5-3 hours because of this one interaction we had at a specific location that just kept going on and going on and going on. And it was a truly kind of, I mean, we were dumbfounded, completely stupefied. And that was our last investigation that we did. So it was almost like a movie, like, holy hell, like, what do we do from here? And I remember we drove back from Louisville to California because we had all this equipment, this precious footage and all this stuff that we didn't feel right about shipping. And Brandon and I were just in there, and we were just like, I remember for the first 10 hours of that long 30-hour drive, we were just like, what the hell just happened, man?
Right.
And like, we were still reeling from it days later. So I guess what we learned is you can never work hard enough to care enough about something that you should care about. You can never be passionate enough. And that's a manual thing. You can create that passion through action. So that's the biggest thing that I learned, is that'll never get old. So whether even if we didn't document anything, the process of us doing that was way more rewarding to me than anything else. Anyway, that's my spiel.
That's why I asked the question, because the bottom line for me was, as I'm reading this, I'm like, these people had to change. Now, not knowing you beforehand, but I got to say, like, I don't know about you, Brandon, but, you know, you know, I think, like, when you put the science and then Brandon, now we're going to put you in there, like, right? You know, Jessica and I went on a trip, and when we came back, we just looked at each other, and all we said was, we're different, aren't we?
Right.
Is that like for you?
Absolutely. You know, because, I mean, going into it, you can only plan for so much, right? There's only so much you think can possibly happen. You can theorize and hypothesize all you want, but until you're there, until you have those moments, and until you walk away with not only the experience, but the data, you don't really know how you're going to react to something like that. And once, like, the stop and put it perfectly, when we had that first 10-hour drive, you know, 10-hour leg of the drive back, we were just like, it was like a dream almost. Like, did all of this really happen? Did we really experience these things? Did we document these things? And it definitely is life-changing. And I cannot wait to show it to people, because what we documented, what we experienced, translated perfectly on camera, which is a rare occurrence. There's so many times where you have that experience and it just doesn't quite translate, right? Doesn't translate to where you can share it with a broader audience. And I think we did really well with that. And I think that people are going to feel like they were along for that huge transformation with us.
Well, and Brandon, to follow up on that, I like what you're saying there about, you know, we have the data. Because what I've noticed in the technique that you guys employ is you don't say, this was a demon, this was a ghost, this was, you present the evidence. You know, because I see too many shows where there's night vision goggles, they shake it around, everyone screams demon. And I'm sitting there like, look, I've conducted over 15,000 readings for people. I've investigated mystical spiritual sites all over the world. I've worked with witch doctors, shamans, Buddhist priests, Hindus, all of that. And I'm looking at this going, seriously, seriously. Shaking night goggle visions, demon, demon, demon. And I'm like, no, there's nothing there. Okay. Yeah. Or people that see a lens flare and start screaming orbs. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to be real careful. And that's what you guys do. You're very careful about jumping to conclusions because that's not the scientific method.
Yeah.
No.
I just got to tell you one thing, though. I don't know, after reading your book, if I will ever. Okay, so this is having an effect like Jaws, like the movie had on me about going swimming back in Jersey, right? I don't know if I'm ever going to go into another hospital again, ever. and see it the same way. So I have to go to therapy, because the way you describe this stuff, and I'm talking about one of the stories, of course, mm-hmm. right? I felt like, oh my God, I think I'm there. Mark, go ahead, right? I mean,
yeah.
You not only the work you do is good, but the way you write about it, it's both very investigatory, that's not even a word, but eerie, dude.
Yeah, I think a lot of that with Brandon and I, we were just really just trying to write what happened and how, as we experienced it, you know? So if it comes off as eerie, that's what we were feeling. We really, really tried our best to not put any sauce on stuff. We don't want to put any sauce. There's no sauce. It's all just, this is what happened. And these are the theories that we have from it. And this is the evidence to support those theories. If anybody else has any other theory, or if they have similar documentation, or if they have things that can disprove it, or what we think may be paranormal, great. Because we've really been about, and this is why I loved working with Brandon so much, and I'm very, very fortunate to be you know, working with him and continuing the work of APRA, is that it's really, really about pushing the field forward. So if you mean that and you work towards that, I just think inevitably you're going to be good. If you're working for the situation, you're going to be good. If you're working to look good, you're going to end up looking like a jerk off. If you're working to make the situation good, you're going to come off good. Then that's it. So like, I've jumped the gun.
Yeah.
There's been times where I've jumped the gun and I'll reel myself back and be like, oh, okay, I was wrong. Like, you know what I mean? It happens, but that's because we're working for the situation.
Mark does that beautifully. If you ever see Mark work, if you ever watch him work, that's why I love working with him. You guys are like the same. If you ever watch Mark work, he is so in integrity. And that's what I find out about you, that you're so in integrity and you make a great team. It's like he and I are the two most unlikely people to be doing this show, but it just works. We love each other and he is a professional. But Brandon, how do you sleep at night? Just ask
him. I don't sleep. Okay. I get very little sleep, but when I do, it's intense. But I will say there was one thing we did encounter while shooting Haunted Discoveries, that something that happened at one of the locations. We investigated a place called Bethlehem Academy that was built in 1828. It had many different lives, but was a girls' reform school for a number of years. And so there's very strict rules associated with this place. A lot of different ideas, a lot of different belief systems went through this location. And I had an experience there that was more impactful months later than it was in the moment, if that makes sense. And it wasn't until I actually started editing this episode and revisiting everything that we encountered and the data we collected that all of that kind of hit me at once and kind of settled in. And I know Mustafa, we were just working on this episode the last couple of days, but I had an instance and experience that I've never experienced in 17 years. And it put a lot of things in perspective for me, life in general, and just almost like these missing pieces of the puzzle that have been gone, missing for the past 17 years kind of came together for me with this case. Wow. So it's unbelievable stuff, but I'm really excited to share it with people for sure.
Hey, Brandon, have you found in your work and that people sometimes experience like psychic trauma, psychological trauma encountering these? And if so, well, you got to refer them to Dr. Pat, you know, but because the thing is, we're used to this, but even when you're used to it, it can be kind of overwhelming. But, you know, you don't necessarily have to, you know, about yourself, but have you worked with people that came away from an encounter with some type of maybe traumatic after effects?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that not only did we deal with some people like that when we shot Ghost Hunters, but we dealt with some people on this show as well, where I don't think they even realize it. But as you're speaking to them and you're interviewing them as an eyewitness or someone that experienced this type of phenomena, I think that, you know, what they're telling you and the things that they're relaying definitely points to them having some kind of trauma associated with it and things they probably have never dealt with, because it's not very often they get to sit down one-on-one with someone like us that can listen to what happened and really kind of you know, analyze that on a deeper level. So yeah, I definitely think we have dealt with people that have walked away with some kind of trauma from experiences in the past, for sure.
Wow.
Mustafa, so, I want to ask you, I know we only have a few minutes left. What are you most excited about as you look ahead? And again, I don't really mean for you to give us a spoiler thing, but I just always love to know what's in you, like somebody's heart in their heads.
For me, it's basically getting to work with Brandon and people who are sincere and genuine. If Brandon and I were, you know, passionate about setting up railroads in like the 1920s, I'd be very excited to go to work every single day with a hammer and putting those spikes in the ground. If we were running a restaurant together, I would love to make the greatest reduction sauce for, you know, a duck a l'orange or whatever the hell it was that we were making. For me, we both have this shared interest. We're like this when we work together and we're in the work, and that's what I really, and the only times I'm ever really upset or I kind of spiral out of control is when I feel like I'm not doing, enough or I'm not working hard enough. And, yeah, that to me, as kind of corny and after school special as that sounds, it's just, I love this because I found someone who loves to do the same kind of work that I do. And we're very, very, very much in line with living life to the fullest and by studying death. So that's my biggest thing. Yeah. That's what I care about more than anything.
Honestly, it shows up in what you put out. You can't create, you can't write a book like this. You can't do it, you two, if you two aren't connected at the soul level. Mark, what do you think?
Absolutely. And you guys are excellent writers. You're good storytellers. You're very good technicians. And I highly, highly recommend the book. Tell everyone once again about the book and where they can find it. Yeah. Brandon.
Yeah. So Elements of a Haunting, connecting history with science to uncover the greatest ghost stories ever told. You can find the book at Barnes & Noble, directly through Llewellyn, Amazon, Walmart. Go on to Google, type in Elements of a Haunting, and it's there. And a lot of love went into the book, a lot of research, and a lot of passion. So I hope that people pick it up and jump right into the research with us.
I mean, could we have had a better Friday the 13th show than this one? I mean, we got the guys that put the, you know, the into 13.
Yeah. I love you guys. Look, I love that the format of the book. I love that you use the format of conversation in the book, because that to me was the golden nugget. I feel like I knew you before you showed up today, and many books don't do that.
Thank
Can
you.
Can we go I'm with happy. Them on Thank their you. Next adventure, Mark? You think they would take us?
I'd be honored. I'd love to work with you guys because I take the same type of approach. We have to approach spirituality with a reverence and also an objectivity and gain all the information. And then in retrospect, then analyze the data before we come to any conclusions. And that is what makes our guests today, Brandon Alves and Mustafa Gadolari, different and how they stand apart from so many of the other paranormal investigators. It's integrity, it's diligence, it's the scientific method. And I want to thank both of you gentlemen for being our guests on the show. Dr. Pat, as usual, you have knocked the ball out of the spiritual psychological park.
I hope they come back. Will they come back when you get closer to, you know, the series that's going to come out? I hope you will come back.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd love to.
I'm already buying copies of this book for my friends because it's just...
Oh, thank you.
I only have one recommendation. If you're like me, you just don't want to be in bed, like on your Kindle reading it. I couldn't stop reading it. You guys rock. Mark, right?
Yeah. You know, it's so funny that so many people... It's like in those vampire movies. They always go searching for the vampire when the sun's going down. It's like... you know, shouldn't it be like when the sun's coming up?
Yeah.
You know, but
you got to work, man. Vampire Hunter don't pay the bills. You
know? No kidding. That's right. Thank you guys so much for everything. Our audience, you're the best audience on the planet. Please take a look at this book. It's available everywhere. Please tap into Mustafa and Brandon. Please make sure you connect with the most incredible Mark Anthony, amazing. And from my heart to yours, please don't lose faith in yourself and what you see Please don't let anyone convince you it's not so. Thank you, everyone.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning into The Psychic in the Dark with Mark Anthony and me, Dr. Pat Basile, right here on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Hey, look, come back next week so we can explore with you more of life's many challenges and learn from fascinating guests. And you know what? Even Mark and me. We'll connect you and discover insights from people in this life and from the afterlife. Extraordinary problems? Yeah, they do. They require extraordinary solutions. But step into the world of possibilities with us on The Psychic and the Doc. That's every Thursday, 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on TransformationTalkRadio.com. That's TransformationTalkRadio.com. And don't forget, we're also live face-to-face on Facebook.com, Transformation Talk Radio.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.